Good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for joining us today. My name is Rowan Sandu, and I'm one of the account managers here at Candlelight. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by my colleague, Neil Jones, who's one of our technical managers and a member of our award-winning iCAN technical support team. This morning's webinar is going to look at the order of gifting for inheritance tax purposes. We'll show why it's crucial to execute each element in the right order, and Neil will go through a few scenarios to illustrate the effect of gifting in the wrong way compared to the right way. Before we get started, just a quick couple of housekeeping points to cover off. For those of you listening live this morning, CPD certificates will be emailed across to you within the next 48 hours. Unfortunately, if you are listening to this recording via the podcast or webinar on the website, then CPD is not available. Talking of the recordings, while today's webinar should be uploaded to the archive section of our website within the next 48 hours. As you can also see, you have a chat box facility on your screens, so please do raise any questions that you have as we go along, and we'll try and pick these up at the end of the webinar if we have some time left. There's also a section there for you to download copies of slides and any relevant handouts and sales aids that Neil will be discussing later on. So without further ado, I'll now hand you over to Neil, who will talk you through the agenda of today's webinar. Neil?
Yes, thank you very much, Rowan. Yes, good morning, everybody. Yes, so what we're going to do is we're going to go through the various different ways in which people can plan for inheritance tax and for making sure their estate goes to the right areas. And that will include things like wills as well, and also gifts and the various exemptions they've got. As Rowan said, we'll be looking at the implications of making those gifts and the specific order in which it's done or not done, as the case may be, and the impact of periodic and exit charges, which does have a driver, if you like, towards the order of gifting. And then finally, we've put a few slides at the end where we'll talk about the 14-year shadow, because that's quite a common question that we get, and it ties in quite nicely with the subject matter that we're discussing today. So if we look at the order of gifting that we always suggest is that people look at their wills first. Then they look at gift and loan trusts, which for reasons we'll come on to. Then they've got their sort of like the normal expenditure, the wedding gifts, the small gifts exemption, and so on. Then we'll look at chargeable lifetime transfers, followed by potentially exempt transfers. And as we go through the slides, you'll see how this works and why the order is in the order it is. So if we move on and look at wills first off, so everybody should really have a will. It's one of those things that I mean, it's relatively cheap to create a will or to have one written. Everybody should have one. There's no reason why not, really. And it just means that the right people benefit after somebody's death. So it allows somebody to decide where their estate goes after they die. And that can provide some security for their family, especially if they've got young children or minors and dependents who they want to look after. So it allows them to make specific legacies to them so they can leave certain assets to certain people. That can cause or alleviate family disputes, depending on the family and the assets that are being left. And it also allows people to create certain trusts, and they can do, quite common, is a life interest trust, where they'll leave the benefit of an asset to somebody, whether it be an income or the right to live in a property for somebody's lifetime. And then it follows on and it goes into another beneficiary. So you have life tenants who are entitled to the benefits during their lifetime, and then remain the men who get the benefits at the end. And they're quite common as part of trusts, and it just allows people to protect and make sure that, for example, a surviving spouse has the ability to live in a house for the rest of their life. And also, wills can also be used to help mitigate inheritance tax by creating trusts such as life interest trusts or nil rate band trusts. And allowing money to be moved aside outside of the estate if need be. A will allows people to choose their executors, so when they die, they need to appoint executors in their will, so that when they die, those people can then distribute their estate in accordance with that will, and it's generally either somebody in the legal profession or a family friend or relative who that person trusts. And we touched on this earlier about minors. It's very important that where there are minor children or minors involved in a family, that a will is created, because that appoints the guardians for that child, and it makes sure that the care of the children goes to the people who this intended to. And it also allows people to avoid intestacy, because if somebody dies without a will, then the estate is distributed in line with divorce and intestacy, which can vary between England and Wales, Scotland and Northern Ireland. But it can just mean that the money goes to somebody who maybe the deceased didn't want to benefit from their will to the extent that they do. So that can be avoided by just creating a will. And then you've also got the ability to add codicils to the will at any point, quite common with gift and loan trusts, or even have deeds of variation, whereby once the deceased has passed away, they've then got 2 years in which they can go back and change the will if need be, all the beneficiaries agree. So it does provide a great deal of flexibility and a great deal of planning opportunity at the point of death and for a short period of time afterwards. So it's important that everybody has a will, and they can be done by will writing services. I'm sure everybody's familiar with that. So revisiting the order of gifting, so that's wills, that's the first area that people should address. And now we look at gift and loan trusts. And I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with gift and loan trusts, but effectively what happens is somebody will establish a trust using a £10 or a nominal amount. Ours is used as £10. That's usually covered by the exemptions. So there is no issue around IHT going into a gift and loan trust because that's the only gift that's being made, that £10. Once the trust is set up, the client then loans money to the trustees, and that's an important bit because it's not a gift, it's actually a loan. It's done on an interest-free basis, so there's no IHT implications for that at the time the gift is made. The loan is made because it's not a gift, so it doesn't use up any part of the nil rate band. And then the trustees invest that money. So the trustees take that loan that they've received and invest that, sometimes or usually, to an investment bond. That's the most common that we see because of the simplicity. And then the original client, the settlor or the donor, depending on what type of trust it is, retains access to loan repayments. They've made an interest-free loan to the trustees, and they can call that back as and when they want. They can either take the loan back as regular payments, maybe to supplement income, or just ad hoc, or even not at all, and just leave it there as an emergency if they want to. The important bit is that the person who created the trust cannot benefit from anything else besides the loan repayment. So that's all they're entitled to back. So any growth that's achieved in the trust is actually owned by the trustees, and it's for the benefit of the beneficiaries. And that growth falls outside of the estate for the client from day one. So if we have a quick look, we won't dwell on gift and loan trust too long, but if we have a quick look at an example. So here we've got £100,000 that's been invested into or lent to trustees, and the trustees have invested it. Down the line, after 10 years, there's £60,000 worth of growth. So as you can see on the screen, we've got our £10 original gift, which was made to set the trust up, the £100,000 loan, and the £60,000 growth. Now the £60,000 growth, as I say, is outside of the settlor's estate from day one, and that is retained for the benefit of the beneficiaries. So the trustees control that. That out. There is the outstanding loan which remains in the settlor's estate, so it's still an asset. So if you like, a gift and loan just sort of caps an inheritance tax liability rather than moves it. So at least the client in this scenario knows that the inheritance tax on that £100,000 of their estate hasn't got any worse and is just still £100,000 in their estate despite the growth on it, because that's outside. So they can call back that £100,000, but they're not allowed to touch the £60,000. Now, if you want to know more about gift and loan trust, shameless plug here, but we do have a webinar in a couple of weeks' time, which a colleague of mine is running, which is just purely about gift and loan trust, and we'll go into those type of arrangements in a lot more detail, and we'll look at the advantages, disadvantages, in more detail. But if you want that, you can go onto the website and register for that. But I don't want to dwell on it too much because I don't want to steal the thunder. But that's gift and loan trust. So we should always look at gift and loan trust second. It does use up the exemptions, so it does sort of overlap with exemptions in general. But the important bit to remember is that the large amount of money that goes into a gift and loan trust is a loan. Okay, so if we have a look at exemptions now. So the important exemptions that people come across, first off, is any gifts to a spouse or civil partner, providing that spouse is UK domicile, then it's an unlimited exemption. Money can pass between husband and wife and civil partners without any implications for inheritance tax. And that can be quite useful when somebody dies. If they just want to pass all their wealth on to their surviving spouse, they can do, or they can make lifetime gifts between the two of them. There's no issues there.
If there is a non-domiciled space, then there is a limitation, but that's a subject for another day. So there's also the annual exemption of £3,000, which everybody has. So each year you're allowed to give away £3,000 to whoever you like. And if you haven't used the £3,000 from the previous year, you can also use that. So it means that people can give away £6,000 in a tax year without any implications. There has been sort of calls for this £3,000 to be increased because this is the same amount as it was 20, 30 years ago when inheritance tax was introduced. It's not been increased, but the Office of Tax Simplification is looking at inheritance tax and other people are calling for this to be increased, at least in line with CPI. But it does allow somebody to move £6,000, and that will come into that as part of the case studies that we'll look at later. In addition to that, there is also a small gifts exemption of £250, which basically means then you can give away, or a client can give away £250 to as many people as they like, and there's no inheritance tax on that. It's only intended for small gifts, so in the grand scheme of estate planning, it doesn't make a great deal of difference. But the important thing to bear in mind is that £250 can't go to the same person who received the £3,000 if people are making use of it. So it just means that they can give away small amounts and not really have to worry about it. Wedding gifts, if anybody has a child or a grandchild or a great-grandchild who gets married, people are allowed to make gifts and be exempt from inheritance tax, and this is per person. So if somebody's got a child, a husband and wife can both give £5,000 in lieu of their wedding, and then it changes depending on how distant the relative is. But it just means that there's money to be able to shift outside of the estate if need be. There's also the opportunity for a parent to help a child who's in full-time education. They're allowed to make help them out, if you like, with their costs, living costs and education costs, and they're exempt from inheritance tax. That's only for parents going to children. And also there's gifts to charities and political parties, and they're exempt, surprisingly enough, politicians exempt the donations to their parties. There's also one which is quite frequently used, especially around life cover, and that's gifts from normal expenditure. And it's important to remember that inheritance tax is a tax on transfers of capital, i.e. money being gifted away or moved around. But surplus income isn't capital, so therefore that can be gifted away. And there are certain rules that have to be met. And these are contained in Section 21 of the Inheritance Tax Act, where it basically says if it's exempt, if it was part of the normal expenditure of the person making the gift, it was made out of surplus income, and it does not affect the donor's standard of living. So effectively what happens is, providing they do have genuine surplus income, they can gift that away, and that's an exempt transfer, so there's no 7-year clock, and that falls outside of their estate straight away. Now, this is something that people have to claim, or the executors will have to claim this relief when somebody dies. So they need to make sure they've got an audit trail and got evidence of this that they can provide to HMRC to prove that the money is outside. So the rules around normal expenditure out of income exemption is the money is, as I say, is immediately outside the donor's estate, and any growth is outside as well. They want, because again, that's been received by the recipients who's giving the money to. The income that they give away doesn't necessarily have to be earned income, it can be investment income or something, but it has to be income. And that's where some people fall foul of this rule, because if you have, say, a discounted gift trust with an investment bond inside it, the income that they're getting from that is actually a return of capital, it's not income, so they can't give that away and use this exemption. They can still use their £3,000 a year, annual exemption if they want to, but they can't use the normal expenditure out of income. So it's important to bear in mind what is capital and what is income. The other area that's mentioned on the slide is purchased life annuities. And at the moment, with interest rates being so low, purchased life annuities are generally a return of capital. A very, very large proportion of the income is a return of capital. And again, that's not deemed to be surplus income. Now, there's no restriction on the amount that can be given, providing it's surplus, and it doesn't affect the donor's standard of living. Strictly speaking, there should be a regular pattern of gifting. The legislation doesn't say that it has to be a fixed amount, it just has to be a regular amount. So say, for example, you have a client who earns an annual bonus, and each year they give that annual bonus away. If they show that as a pattern of following such a decision, that's fine, they can see that, and the amounts will obviously vary year on year. It's also open-ended, which is very, very useful, so it can just carry on. But the important bit to remember, as I said, about surplus income is you can't use capital to subsidise. They have to be able to maintain their standard of living with the income that's remaining in their estate or that they haven't given away, and they can't use capital to subsidise that, so they can't be used directly or indirectly to fund this exemption. So it has to be true, genuine surplus income. So that covers off the exemptions, or the main parts of the exemptions that we come across. So now looking at chargeable lifetime transfers. Now, very briefly, we'll just cover off the definition of these. This is contained in the IXT manual, and it's basically any transfer that doesn't qualify as a potentially exempt transfer is technically immediately chargeable to inheritance tax. Now, effectively, anything that does not qualify as a potentially exempt transfer, there's two real main areas, and that's a transfer to what's called a relevant property trust, which to you and me mainly is going to be discretionary trusts, or a transfer to a company is deemed to be a chargeable lifetime transfer. So they're the common ones that we will come across. Discretionary trusts have become more popular since 2006 when the trust rules changed and flexible trusts sort of took a back seat because they were no longer potentially exempt, they were chargeable. And if people are going to have chargeable lifetime transfers, then a discretionary trust has a lot more flexibility. So many people started using discretionary trusts much more at that point. So the lifetime transfers, as I say, anything that goes into a relevant property trust, mainly that's a discretionary trust, whether that be a gift trust or a discounted gift trust or even a flexible reversionary trust. And anything since 2006 when the trust changes happened, that also applies to accumulation and maintenance trust and interest in possession trusts, unless they were qualifying, which the most common way is ones that are set up in a will as a will trust with an interest in possession. They are qualifying, so they don't fall under the relevant property regime from the start. So these types of trusts, any money that goes into them is deemed to be a chargeable lifetime transfer. Now, when they go into a relevant property trust, there is periodic and exit charges, and what I've done is I've just included a few slides just to remind ourselves about the periodic and exit charges that can apply to any money that sits in relevant property trusts. So if we have a look at an example here where we've got the value of a trust, so we've got the nil rate band is the blue line, or the available nil rate band, and then we've got the value of the trust is the red line. Now, the available nil rate band, when we start looking at periodic charges, is the nil rate band on the 10th anniversary when the periodic charge rises, or each 10-year anniversary. And that's reduced by any chargeable lifetime transfers in the 7 years before the trust was set up. Now, in this example here, we've got the value of the trust, but the trustees decide to distribute that money in year 9. Excuse me. So, as the original gift was within the nil rate band, there was no tax outset or no chargeable lifetime transfer exceeding the nil rate band outset. So, therefore, when they distributed the money to the beneficiaries, there was no exit charge on that money. Now, if that trustee had carried on rather than being just wound up in year 9 and the money distributed, and had been saved onto year 15. Before being distributed to the beneficiaries, what we need to do is then look at the periodic charge on the 10th anniversary. In this instance, there was no periodic charge, so therefore there's no exit charge on the money going out to the beneficiaries. If we take another example where the value of the trust had actually exceeded the available nil rate band on the 10-year anniversary, what we have is there's an excess over the nil rate band, and therefore a periodic charge of 6% applies to that excess amount. And then because a periodic charge has applied, when any money is subsequently distributed to the beneficiaries, you have to look back to the previous 10-year anniversary or to outset, it was less than 10 years, did that exceed nil rate band? Yes, it did. So therefore there is an exit charge on that distribution. And that's something to bear in mind with relevant property trusts, and this is one of the things that's key to the order of gifting. Now, if we put some figures around that, if we look at a trust, say it's got a value on the 10th anniversary of £400,000, we'll assume the nil rate band is £375,000, so therefore the periodic charge of 6% applies to the excess £25,000, which gives us a periodic charge of £1,500, an example, and that is paid for by the trustees. The trustees have to get trust assets in order to meet that liability, and they have 6 months from the 10-year anniversary of the trust in which to pay that tax liability, you're going to have to do a tax return to HMRC. Subsequently, in this example, we'll say the trust has grown to £500,000, and that money is paid out to the beneficiaries a couple of years later. Now, that will have an exit charge because it was a periodic charge on the previous 10th anniversary. We have to work out the effective rate of tax on the trust. So the trust, the tax that was paid was £1,500 and the value of the trust was £400,000. So therefore, the rate of tax that applied to that trust was 0.375%. The exit charge of 0.375% is applied to the withdrawal or the distribution of £500,000. But we do get to pro rata it. So you have to look at the 10-year period and how far into the 10-year period the distribution has been made. In this example, it's 2 years down the line. We look at calendar quarters. So it's 2 years down the line, so that's 8 calendar quarters have passed, and that out of 40, which make up the entire 10-year period, so therefore you get to pro rata the tax by 8 over 40, which gives you a tax liability of £375 on the distribution of £500,000. And again, that's paid for by the trustees. Now, in that example, it's not a great deal of money, but people need to be aware of it because it's the responsibility of the trustees to calculate that and also to pay the tax liability if one exists. So it's important to be aware. So moving back to our order of gifting, if we now look at potentially exempt transfers, well, potentially exempt transfers are much more straightforward. They're just outright gifts, whether they be to an individual or to certain trusts. Most commonly bear or absolute trusts, but also you can have disabled persons trusts, and then there's a few other sort of not as commonly used trusts, which can be potentially exempt transfers. Now, the definition in the IHT manual says that a potentially exempt transfer is a transfer of value made by an individual after 18th of March 1986, when inheritance tax came in, or is a gift to another individual or into a specific trust, which, as I say, for purposes that we come across, is mainly bare absolute trust or disabled persons trust. Prior to 2006, gifts into accumulation and maintenance trust and flexible trust were also potentially exempt transfers. So they would have qualified prior to 2006, but since the 22nd of March, that doesn't apply anymore. They're chargeable lifetime transfers. So certainly if you've got a pre-2006 flexible trust, it's important to consider any changes that are made to that, because if certain changes occur, it can be brought into the relevant property regime. And you then take them to trust, which doesn't have periodic charges, and put it into an environment where they do apply. So that's something just to be a bit wary of. So that's looking at the different types of gifts and planning that people can do. And now what we'll do is we'll have a case study with Bill and Ben, and we'll explore the order of gifting and the implications of making potentially exempt transfers and chargeable lifetime transfers, and how this can affect the inheritance tax liability and the longer term view. So Bill and Ben, both wealthy people, and they have a similar size estate and similar wealth. The objective is they both want to reduce their inheritance tax planning, and they both put aside a similar amount of money. So they want to make use of their annual gift exemptions of £3,000 for both this year and the previous tax year. They want to put £325,000 into a discretionary trust to make use of their nil rate band. They want to do a gift and loan trust for a further £300,000 each. And they also want to make an outright gift of £250,000 each as a potentially exempt transfer. So very similar cases, but we'll have a look at how they do this and how the order can affect the tax that's payable. So if we look at Bill first, he makes an outright gift of basically £255,990, an odd figure, but you'll see why in a minute. So that's his outright gift, his potentially exempt transfer of £250,000, and also making use of the majority of his annual gift exemptions of £3,000. Then a week later, he does his discretionary trust for £325,000. And then a week after that, he does his gift and loan trust using the £10 exemption. The £10 set it up using his annual gift exemption, and also £300,000 that he loans to the trustees. And that means that he's put aside £581,000. Obviously, the loan is just a loan, so that's still counted, but he's effectively gifted away £581,000. If we look at Ben, he does it in a slightly different order. So he does his gift and loan trust first. So he's got his £10 to set the trust up and the £300,000 loan. A week later, he does an outright gift using up the balance of his two lots of £3,000. A week after that, he does his discretionary trust for £325,000. And then he makes his outright absolute gift of £250,000. So again, he has given away effectively £581,000 and has got the loan on top of that. So looking at how these are gifts or what type of gifts they are, Bill has got £6,000 exempt and £249,990 is a potentially exempt transfer as an outright gift. The discretionary trust, well, that's a full chargeable lifetime transfer and he's within his nil rate band, so there's no issue around tax at outset. However, the gift and loan trust, the £10 to set the trust up, is a chargeable lifetime transfer. That has exceeded his nil rate band, so therefore he's got a 20% tax charge on that and he has to fill in the required paperwork, which is the IT100 supplementary forms that go with it. So he's already incurred some inheritance tax on making the gift. The £300,000 that goes into the gift and loan trust, well, that's a loan, so that's not actually a gift. If we compare that to Ben, well, Ben has made his gift and loan trust of where he's put the £10 in, and the £10 is exempt, and the £300,000 is the loan. He's then used up the balance of his two lots of £3,000, so they're exempt, so that subsequent gift is also an exempt transfer. His discretionary trust uses the £325,000 nil rate band. It's within that, so there's no entry IHT charges applying to that. And then he's made his outright gift of a £250,000 potentially exempt transfer. So looking at that scenario, we'll then work on the basis that both Bill and Ben died 3.5 years later, and they've both left an estate of £800,000. So again, very, very similar, and we'll see how that affects things. So if we look at Bill's inheritance tax calculation, we remind ourselves of the gifts that he's made. So he's got his potentially exempt transfer, because when somebody dies, you go back 7 years and move forward adding gifts into the inheritance tax calculation. So in this instance, the £249,990 potentially exempt transfer goes in first. The £6,000 on top of it was exempt. So that uses up the majority of his nil rate band. We then add on, that's then failed because he's died within 7 years of making it, so that then becomes chargeable, and hence it's part of his inheritance tax calculation. The discretionary trust that he made a week later then sits on top of that in the inheritance tax calculation. At the time he made it, that was within his nil rate band, but it's now not within his nil rate band, as you can see, because the failed PET goes in first. And then he's got his gift and loan trust, the £10 charge of the lifetime transfer that sits on top of that, and then the estate that he's left on death, the £800,000, sits on top. Now, if we have a look at the tax that's payable, well, the failed PET is just shy of £250,000. That sits within the nil rate band, that's chargeable at 0%. It was made just over 3 years ago, so therefore he gets 80% taper relief, but 80% of zero is zero, so therefore the taper relief is no benefit, but that there's no inheritance tax on. The chargeable, the balance of the nil rate band, which is made up by the chargeable lifetime transfer, which is just over £75,000, again is chargeable at zero. It would qualify for taper relief, but it's zero tax, so therefore that's ineffectual as well, but there's no tax payable on that. The balance of the chargeable lifetime transfer of just shy of £250,000, that's chargeable at 40%, and again, that gets taper relief, so that does reduce the tax that's payable on that, so that brings it down to £79,997. You've got the £10 chargeable lifetime transfer that he made to set up the gift and loan trust. That again is chargeable at 40% with 80% taper relief, reduced down. But he gets his credit for the £2 that they paid at outset because of the 20% entry IHT charge. So therefore, the tax due on that is £1.20. And then he's got his £800,000 estate that he's left on death, which is chargeable at the full 40%, no taper relief because there's no gift, so therefore that gives him £320,000. Now, that's the inheritance tax that's payable on his estate and the gifts that he's made, but it's important to see who pays these gifts, because if you have a look at the chargeable lifetime transfer into the discretionary trust, there's inheritance tax of just shy of £80,000 on that, and that's paid for by the trustees. Those that that money, that £325,000, isn't in his estate anymore, so why should his estate pay the inheritance tax? So therefore, that actually falls on the trustees to pay that money, so they would have to realise trust assets in order to satisfy the tax liability. The chargeable lifetime transfer, also, that's sitting within a trust, so that's paid by the trustees. And then the £320,000, that's going to be paid for by Bill's estate. That's Bill's inheritance tax calculation when he dies. If we have a look at Ben's, and we'll remind ourselves again of the gifts that he's made. So first into the inheritance tax calculation is the £325,000 chargeable lifetime transfer. As I say, at the time that was within his nil rate band, so there was no entry IHT charge, it's still within the nil rate band. The two gifts that he made beforehand are both exempt, so they both fall outside of the calculation. We then have the potential exempt transfer of £250,000 that was made, and that's become chargeable because he's died within 7 years of making that. And then we've got the estate that he left on death of £800,000. So if we have a look at the tax that's payable, the £325,000 is within the nil rate band, so it's chargeable at 0%, so there's no inheritance tax payable on that. The potential exempt transfer of £250,000, that's chargeable at 40%, and there's 80% take relief, so therefore, take relief 80%, so therefore, he's got £880,000 to pay for £80,000 of inheritance tax liability. And then you've got the residual estate that he's left on death of £800,000, again, that's chargeable at 40%, giving us a liability of £320,000. So, a lot simpler. But remember that the £80,000 is paid by the recipients of that potentially exempt transfer. So whoever got that money, it's got a tax liability that they need to pay. And then the £320,000 is payable by the estate. So if we have a look, quick look at the summary here. So the total amount of inheritance tax that's collected on Bill's death is £400,000. And then if we compare that to Ben's estate, well, that's £400,000 as well. So you're probably wondering why I've been going on about this, because the tax is exactly the same. But what we need to do is we need to sort of speed forward, if you like, and look at 10 years later and what happens to the trusts that have been set up 10 years later. Now, we'll say that they all continue to their 10th anniversary, and for the purpose of the example, we'll say that the loans of £300,000, well, they've grown to £450,000 and there's been no loan repayments being taken. The £325,000 that was put into discretionary gift trust by both of them have grown to £500,000, and we'll be optimistic and say the nil rate band is now £400,000. So the important thing to bear in mind is that the relevant property trusts, i.e. the discretionary trusts and the gift and loan trusts, are going to be subject to periodic charges on this 10th anniversary. So again, remind ourselves of Bill's position. So he's got his discretionary trust. So the value of the trust has gone up to £500,000. There's no loan outstanding on a discretionary trust, so we use the full value. His nil rate band is £400,000, but that is reduced because he's got the failed potentially exempt transfer, which was done in the 7 years before the discretionary trust was set up. So therefore, that uses just shy of £250,000 of the nil rate band, meaning that the trustees, in this instance, only have £150,010 available to offset against the periodic charge. So therefore, the excess amount in the trust is £350,000, or just short of that, which gives the trustees a periodic charge of just under £21,000. If we then look at his gift and loan trust, there's £450,000 is the value. The outstanding loan is £300,000, gives us a net value of £150,000. The nil rate band for this trust, well, you need to look, you've got the failed potentially exempt transfer, which has become chargeable, so that reduces the nil rate band down, as it does for the discretionary trust. But you've also got the discretionary trust that he made the week before the gift and loan, and that basically wipes out the nil rate band for the trustees. So the whole value of the trust is going to be subject to a 6% charge, giving him a £9,000 tax liability on the 10th anniversary. If we compare that to Ben's trusts, remind ourselves of them. So he's got his gift and loan trust, which he did first. So he's got £450,000 is the value, again, of the £3,000 outstanding loan. So the net value of the trust is £150,000. The nil rate band available to the trustees is £400,000 because there has been no chargeable lifetime transfers or failed pets in the 7 years before this trust was set up. So they get £400,000. The value of the trust is well within that, so therefore there is no excess and the periodic charge is zero. If we look at his discretionary trust, well, he's got £500,000. The nil rate band is £400,000, but again, he's got no chargeable lifetime transfers in the 7 years before this trust was set up. There were gifts that were all exempt, and the gift and loan was just a loan, so therefore that doesn't impact the nil rate band. So the trustees have £400,000 nil rate band, the excess is £100,000, but the periodic charge is therefore £6,000. So if we summarise this, so we look at Bill's trusts, he's got his discretionary trust and his gift and loan trust, and the trustees between them have got to find £30,000, in periodic charges, reducing the amount of money that's available to the beneficiaries of those trusts, because the money does come out of the trust assets themselves. Ben's trust, well, he's got no periodic charge on the gift and loan trust, or the trustees haven't, and the discretionary trust has only got a £9,000 charge. So significantly less tax payable by the trustees of Ben's trust than Bill's trust. And that's what largely drives the order of gifting, because it's, you look at the longer term picture rather than the shorter term picture. Because this will happen every 10 years. It's not just the first 10th anniversary, but it's every 10 years these trusts are in place. These calculations need to be made. And some money can sit in trusts for quite a while. The perpetuity rules are only 25 years. So over a period of time, this can amount to quite a lot of tax. And then you need to consider exit charges, because if you've got a periodic charge or an entry charge, you've got exit charges. So Bill's trusts, both of his, when the trustees want to distribute any money out to the beneficiaries, they're going to have exit charges to pay. They will need to calculate, and they will also need to remit to HMRC. Whereas Ben's trust, his gift and loan trust, doesn't have any exit penalties at this stage, and the discretionary trust does. So more tax to pay on an ongoing basis. So going back to our order of gifting, it's important to get it right, because you've got to take into account the longer term picture and the 10-year anniversary charges that can apply. And as I say, they apply on each and every 10th anniversary that the trust is in force. And so you can see that because the nil rate band is reduced down by the chargeable transfers made in the 7 years before the trust is set up, the trustees need to keep records potentially going back quite a few years if the trust is in place for a while. Then you've got the trustees made up with a much higher tax liability than they ever imagined, because they've got these periodic charges being impacted by other gifts that the same settlor or the same donor has made. And that's why it's important when clients start talking about gifting large sums of money, it's important that they speak to people like yourselves, financial advisors and wealth managers, to make sure they understand the implications of what they're doing. They may choose to go ahead and do it, but they need to understand how that's going to impact other things that they might want to do. Now, one of the other things to bear in mind is potentially, as you probably worked out, you can actually go back 14 years to see if a tax liability may occur. I'm just conscious of time because we've got 40 minutes now. But we'll just cover off these slides very quickly and just explain. We've got two clients, Mr. Orange and Mr. Blue. So we've got a timeline here. So Mr. Orange makes a potentially exempt transfer in April 2015, and then 3 years later makes another potentially exempt transfer of £200,000. Mr. Blue, on the other hand, did a £200,000 chargeable lifetime transfer in April 2015, but also did a £200,000 potentially exempt transfer in April 18. So you can see, given away similar amounts of money, but just done it in a different way. And in this example, we assume that they both die in April 2023, leaving an estate of £500,000 when they die. And the nil rate band will say is £370,000 in this example. So Mr. Orange, well, the potentially exempt transfer he made in April 2015 is potentially exempt, and he survived 7 years from the date of making that gift, and therefore that falls outside of his estate and doesn't come into the calculation. But if we have a look at his inheritance tax liability, we've got £370,000 nil rate band, so we've got the £200,000 potentially exempt transfer that sits there because that's now failed and becomes chargeable, and the value of the estate sits on top of that. We've got tax on the failed pet is at zero because it's within the nil rate band, as is part of the estate. The surplus of the estate, i.e. £330,000, is actually chargeable at 40%, giving a tax liability of £132,000. So that's Mr. Orange's tax liability when he dies. Now, Mr. Blue has exactly the same, because in the previous 7 years, he made a potentially exempt transfer of £200,000 and left an estate of £500,000. So they're exactly the same calculations. If we have a look at the implications of the failed pets, so we look at Mr. Orange, £200,000 failed pet. At the time he made that, that was potentially exempt, failed to be potentially exempt, so therefore we need to look back 7 years from the date of that potentially exempt transfer to work out what nil rate band would have been available at that time. There weren't any chargeable lifetime transfers, so therefore he's got no additional tax to pay. There isn't any additional tax to pay on that failed potentially exempt transfer. Mr. Blue, on the other hand, well, he's got a chargeable lifetime transfer that was made within 7 years of that failed potentially exempt transfer. So his inheritance tax calculation, whilst being the same, we then need to look at the tax liability on that potentially exempt transfer. So the PET has failed. However, in the 7 years before that potentially exempt transfer, there was a chargeable lifetime transfer of £200,000, which effectively pushes the potentially exempt transfer partly above the nil rate band and into the 40% mark. So we've got the tax on the potentially exempt transfer, £170,000 of it is going to be taxed at zero, but £30,000 of it is going to be taxed at 40% with taper relief, giving a tax liability of £7,200 on the failed PET. So as we can see, the tax liability there on Mr. Blue's failed PET, £7,200, and that's paid by the recipients of the PET. Similar to the example for Bill and Ben, in this example we can see that you've got that extra liability on that potentially exempt transfer. So from the date of death, you have to go back 7 years to look to see if there's any failed potentially exempt transfers, and if there is, you need to go back 7 years from the date of that potentially exempt transfer to see if there are any chargeable lifetime transfers. And that's where the whole 14-year shadow can come into it, and that's why people need to keep detailed records of what money they've given away, and also make sure that they assess the impact of making any gifts. So that's going back to our learning objectives. We've covered off the various areas of estate planning and the implications of making gifts in specific orders and the 14-year shadow. So I hope that's been of use. I hope you've found that useful. We've got various different handouts that are available, the downloads are available because a copy of the slides and some briefing notes and case studies around the order of gifting. They're available to download in the download window. We've also got on our website various brochures, newsletters and so on that people can obtain. And we've also got the account manager support, which people like Rowan are more than happy to provide. And we've also got an estate planning guide that we've been working on with a company called Intelligent Partnership. There's other companies that have been involved as well, which is very useful. It's quite a chunky document, but you can just go on onto their website, register, and download a copy of it. And then the details of that, if you download the slides, the link will be there. And there's also a link on our website. Before I hand over back to Rowan, I'll just shamelessly plug some roadshows that we're running again. So as well as the webinar earlier on, I'm also going to talk about roadshows. We've got Tony Wickenden doing some presentations with us, as well as some people from Canada Life, around the use of tax wrappers and different tax wrappers and the investments that you hold underneath them. You can go onto the website. They're being held around the country. There's various different locations. So hopefully there'll be one near to you, which you'll be able to register for and attend. And find that very useful. But that's all from me, so I'll hand back to Rowan, and thank you very much for your time.
Perfect, thank you very much, Neil. A lot of great information there, which I hope everyone found useful. Due to the constraint of time, we won't be able to go through any of the questions that were asked, but if you have left some, we will get back to you shortly with some responses. But yeah, thank you very much everyone for listening this morning. If you would like to discuss any of the estate planning solutions that we do offer here at Canada Life, you're always welcome to get in contact with your Canada Life account manager. You can also see the contact details on the screen for our UK and international support and technical teams, who are always happy to answer any questions that you might have. Finally, there will be a short survey for you to complete as you exit the webinar, so we thank you for any feedback that you can give us on that. We will be switching off the audio for now. We will leave the chat box open for the next few minutes, just in case you have any final questions that you fancy sending across to us. So thank you again, and hope that you will be joining us again soon. Take care. Bye-bye.